The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Presentations and interviews with leading attorneys and industry professionals. On this edition, Robert Rapp of Calfee Hodder & Griswold in Cleveland on the misapplication of the federal extraterritoriality principle in limiting the scope of civil remedies for fraud under state blue sky laws. The opinions expressed by guests interviewed on LexisNexis Legal Podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of Reed Elsevier Incorporated, LexisNexis, subsidiary companies, shareholders, employees, or customers, and should not be considered legal advice. Robert N. Rapp is the author of Blue Sky Regulation, a four-volume treatise published by LexisNexis Matthew Bender, covering state securities regulation in the United States. He's a partner in Calfee, Halter & Griswold in Cleveland, where his practice concentration is financial market regulation and related litigation. Mr. Rapp's also adjunct professor of law at the Case Western Reserve University School of Law. He holds BA and JD degrees from Case Western Reserve University and an MBA from the Cleveland State University Nance School of Business. His many writings appear in a wide range of law journals and publications. He's author of several LexisNexis expert commentaries addressing current issues in the scope and enforcement of state securities laws. His most recent work in that area is about to be published in the winter 2011 issue of the Securities Regulation Law Journal. Mr. Rapp, thank you for being here.
Steve, I'm happy to do it.
The state securities laws, or blue sky laws, have been around for a long time and continue to carry out their particular investor protection mission, which is heavily oriented to protection against fraud in tandem with federal securities laws. And over time, particular applications of blue sky laws have been tested under the U.S. Constitution and challenges relating to regulation of interstate commerce. And more recently, the dual federal and state system of securities regulation has been addressed by Congress to define the proper scope of state regulatory authority. But the historic mission of blue sky laws to protect against fraud has never really been an issue. But that said, a recent decision by a federal court in Ohio raised a constitutional challenge to the scope of civil remedies for fraud under blue sky laws that may threaten the ongoing success of that mission. What happened that's causing this concern?
Late last year, and I have to preface it by saying there's been a long-running case or series or complex of cases in Ohio, federal courts in Ohio, the Southern District of Ohio, that arose out of a massive, really multi-billion dollar fraud that was carried out some years ago by an entity known as National Century Financial Enterprises. And that case has sent several people to jail, has been heard and determined on various issues over time through the course of the litigation in both the district court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. But late last year, there was another chapter in the National Century Financial Enterprises litigation, and it had to do with a claim that had been made under a civil remedy provision of the Ohio securities law, that is the Ohio blue sky law. And very typically, Ohio includes within its state securities law a very specific express right of action under which a purchaser of securities may sue or may recover the rescission of that purchase, recover the purchase price along with interest and attorney's fees, in an action against the seller of those securities, and in many cases, other secondary actors in that process, where there has been a violation of the blue sky law. And in this particular situation, there was really no issue that there had been fraud in the offer and sale of securities. National Century created securities that were distributed beyond Ohio to some large institutional investors who, not surprisingly, alleged as the thing developed that they had been defrauded, and brought a number of cases. In this particular aspect of the litigation, the issue was whether or not one of these institutional investors could make a claim under the rescission provision or the statutory remedy provision of the Ohio Securities Act. And the court considered that and made a determination that the answer should be no, because the purchaser in this situation, the plaintiff, if you will, on that claim, was located outside the state of Ohio. And the actual transaction had occurred outside the state of Ohio. And therefore, by adopting a very narrow test of what should be the scope or the reach of the Ohio securities law, the district court said, as a matter of constitutional law, that would be to allow that claim would be an interference with interstate commerce, impermissibly so, and therefore dismissed the claim of this particular investor on those grounds.
What's the remedy involved here?
Well, as I say, every blue sky law, whether it's based on a version of the Uniform Securities Act or otherwise, has a civil remedy for rescission of a securities transaction by a purchaser against a person who offers or sells a security in violation of that state's blue sky law. Now, some of those statutes are worded more broadly than others, and Ohio is one that is worded somewhat more broadly because it includes within it the potential for liability of people who, for example, aid or participate with a seller, and thus extending the potential scope of liability under the provision, which if properly presented to the court and within the statute of limitations and certain other things that are required, results in rescission of a purchase transaction. You get your money back along with interest and, as I say, attorney's fees. So it's a very significant remedy. These are express private rights of action. And they're not available as a matter of federal securities law to a large extent. They're easier to prove, if you will. And it's because it's express and because it's very specific as a civil remedy, it's very important to have this remedy available where it is not otherwise available. And that's the situation. And with all of these remedies, they are much more meaningful than what would otherwise be available. The problem that came up in National Century, though, is that the court looked at the civil remedy provision in the Ohio law as amounting to, because it was attempted to be applied by or to be available to a purchaser who was not in Ohio and in a transaction that did not take place in Ohio, the court looked at that and said, well, wait, that's a, you know, the concept is extraterritorial. That's an extraterritorial regulation of commerce, and that offends the U.S. Constitution and the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution, and therefore this remedy shouldn't be available to any purchaser who purchased the securities in out-of-state transactions. And what's important to keep in mind here is that the circumstances of the context in which this occurred. National Century was an Ohio corporation headquartered in Ohio, its principal place of business in Ohio. And the fraud, if you will, was hatched in Ohio and executed from Ohio. The way this occurred is that securities, these were essentially promissory notes or debt securities, were created by National Century and then offered and sold through a couple of special purpose entities, again, created in Ohio as Ohio entities, who actually issued the securities and offered and sold through an intermediary process in which there was, in this situation, the focus was on Credit Suisse, the broker-dealer affiliate of Credit Suisse, in which it acted first as what was referred to expressly as a placement agent, engaged by National Century to do that, and then a bit later on in the process as an actual underwriter of those securities. And Credit Suisse, engaging in that function, again, an intermediary function, went outside the state of Ohio to offer and sell the securities to non-Ohio residents, institutions that were not Ohio residents. And that is what provoked the issue, in the sense that where even though an Ohio corporation had created the securities, had created specific entities to issue the securities, had entered into an intermediary process, an arrangement with first the placement agent, then the underwriter, same entity, the fact that the actual transaction, and there were no transactions in this particular situation, there were no transactions in Ohio. All of the transactions took place outside of Ohio. And focusing only on the transaction, rather than the process that led up to it, this particular court said, well, the commerce all took place outside of Ohio. And therefore, by allowing a private civil remedy, and remember, this is not the state of Ohio or securities regulatory authorities in the state of Ohio attempting to exercise its authority, attempting to regulate conduct outside the state. This is simply whether or not a civil remedy is available to purchasers. But the court determined that there really was no difference, and that therefore you must look at where the transaction occurs in order to define the scope of that remedy. And the court came down on the finding, what it called a bright line transaction test. It simply said, if the transaction does not take place in Ohio or whatever state, as you extend it out as precedent, then the civil remedy is not going to be available. And that's what's causing kind of a stir, because there is really no precedent for that. There is a fair amount of judicial attention to the extent to which state regulators could attempt to exercise their authority outside of a jurisdiction, not necessarily involving securities regulators, but other state agencies in general. But there hasn't been a case that has said a private civil remedy should be restricted or barred based on the notion that the transaction, the ultimate transaction, took place somewhere else, even though all of the activity leading up to it was really anchored in the state of Ohio. So there you see a very, very important remedy vanishing in the eyes of this court simply because a transaction took place someplace else.
Well, in terms of this bright line transaction test that the court used, what do you see as the fundamental problem with that?
Well, in a real sense, Steve, it's a failure to understand what state securities laws, and for that matter, federal securities laws, are all about and what they're intended to protect, how they function. Because here you have a court that saw this bright line transaction test and says that the territorial reach of state securities laws will be determined by that without any consideration, as I said before, of the process that leads to an ultimate transaction, without any focus on what is really involved. I mean, here we have a provision, as I said before, is not like the state trying to reach out and regulate. This is a remedial provision. It's available to provide a remedy for persons who are victimized by fraud. The fundamental problem is that this particular court said that the commerce or the conduct that is reached by the Ohio securities law is a securities transaction and not the fraud. Now, that's kind of a backward logic, because blue sky laws have always been addressed to fraud and protection against fraud. Transaction is irrelevant in terms of maybe the ultimate result of a process involving fraud. But this court said, no, the focus is on the transaction and not the fraud. And those are the court's own words. The court said the actual transaction took place outside of Ohio. And in fact, the only thing that took place inside of Ohio, in the court's eyes, was that the securities were issued in Ohio by an Ohio corporation. And the judge simply stopped there. The judge said the anti-fraud provisions of the Ohio securities law speak in terms of offers and sales, not issuances of securities. Well, there is the real problem as well, lies in that, because the judge got it right when he said that Ohio securities law and all state securities laws deal with offers and sales of securities. But then he went on to say not issuances. The thing is, the judge paid no attention to the meaning of offer or sale of securities in the context of state securities regulation, and frankly, in the context of federal securities regulation as well. Because what happens is, state securities laws address acts and conduct in the offer and sale of securities. Those terms are defined terms in the statutes, and the definition of these terms encompasses an entire process by which securities are created and then distributed into the hands of investors. So you have securities in this case, which were created by National Century in Ohio with no purpose other than to distribute them using two Ohio special purpose entities that it created in order to get them into the hands, and an intermediary entity in order to get them into the hands of investors. And that's where Credit Suisse had been engaged as that intermediary entity. But the purpose here was singular, and that is to distribute securities into the hands of investors. A purchase transaction is the ultimate event. It's the product of that process. But it's the process, that distribution, is what's addressed by state securities laws. And all that took place base, the anchor point for all of that activity was in Ohio, as well as the fraud itself. And you know, where the ultimate purchase transaction ultimately occurs is not really the issue. You can't define the territorial scope of a remedy under state securities law by the place of a transaction. It's not like selling commercial goods. It's not like one state attempting to prevent or interdicting the sale of commercial goods in another state and having to get involved in the process or attempting to get involved in the process of where a transaction took place. And because in the sale of commercial goods, that may be relevant and often is. But investor protection under state securities laws doesn't fit within that simple transactional test because blue sky laws have never focused on a commercial transaction someplace. Blue sky laws focus on acts and conduct, a process within a state, and it simply doesn't matter that a transaction, a purchaser, is injured by that somewhere else, because every act that's carried out in that process is part of a distribution. It's a link in the chain of distribution. And that was fundamentally missed by the court. And unfortunately, it led to this bright line transaction test. And like I said before, it's kind of backward logic, looking at the transaction rather than the process that leads to it.
You draw a distinction between remedial provisions under state securities laws available to defrauded purchasers and protection of actual regulatory authority by a state into other states. Why does that matter so much?
Well, that is the key distinction, and it's borne out in a good deal of the law that has developed over time concerning state securities laws. I mean, if you think of it in terms of impeding or preventing, putting up a roadblock to something happening, as opposed to providing an after-the-fact remedy for something that has occurred. You look at this as the difference, the distinction between projecting some kind of authority to block or prevent or control versus an after-the-fact remedy that is available. And by providing this rescission remedy to an investor who ultimately purchases a security in a distribution executed from here, Ohio, or any other state, the blue sky law doesn't reach out to impede anything. It doesn't block interstate commerce. It only provides this post hoc remedy for persons who are victimized by the fraud. And, you know, we've seen the difference as it's been applied to state securities laws. Back in the 80s, I mean, there was a rush, if you will, by states to enact anti-takeover laws. Many of them were made a part of the state blue sky laws. And when states added these anti-takeover provisions to their blue sky laws, the function was, in fact, the intended purpose was to block an interstate tender offer, block all transactions simply based on the fact that a target company had some connection to the state, some substantial assets in the state, typically was the a basis that was used. And in carrying out this function, and courts looking at them, the court struck them down. Ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court struck them down because of that sweeping extraterritorial impact, because they directly restrained interstate commerce. But this is the basis for what has kind of loosely been referred to, and what our particular court did in the National Century case, is the principle known as the extraterritoriality principle. It derives from the Commerce Clause, and it says that states may not control out-of-state commerce or conduct. Well, that was the basis for courts striking down anti-takeover laws that were part of state securities laws that had the effect of blocking transactions outside the state. And that's a perfect illustration of blocking, mm-hmm. of stepping in, of impeding commerce. But compare that to the situation and ask the question, does allowing a remedy to out-of-state purchasers of securities amount to controlling out-of-state commerce or conduct? Ask the question, does it present any burden on interstate commerce? That was the issue that the court should have dealt with in National Century, but it didn't really answer the first question. It did go on to say, frankly, no, there was no burden on interstate commerce. Actually, the court concluded that. But that because the commerce occurred wholly outside of Ohio, that should be a per se, without further consideration, application of the extraterritoriality principle. And then remember, the court equated the remedy with an exercise of state regulation outside the state, and therefore, per se, it applies, and therefore, it must not be available. Now, I have to be fair to the court, although the judge didn't attempt to base his preclusion on the application of the Ohio remedy by concluding that there was some burden on interstate commerce, I have to say that he did express some concern over potentially different liability standards among Ohio and other blue sky laws that could have an effect on interstate commerce. Back a few minutes when I was talking about the remedy, and I mentioned that this express remedy of rescission is for the benefit of a purchaser to be raised and asserted against a seller of securities where there is a violation of the blue sky law. Now, in Ohio and other states, to one degree or another, there are provisions within those remedies that would allow the liability to extend beyond simply the seller, however that may be defined. And that can be broadly defined as well. But in Ohio, for example, and this was something that the district court in National Century brought up, Ohio talks about persons who aid or participate in a sale. And that's true. The statutory wording of Ohio is such. And then the court would look at another state and say, well, the transaction taking place in another state, the blue sky law of that state perhaps would not be so broad. And in fact, sometimes they're not so broad. And therefore, the court would look at that and say, even the making the remedy available thus must have some kind of, and this is basically what the court said, must have some kind of effect on interstate commerce because of the varying standards for secondary liability. But here again, I mean, it's kind of a myopic focus that is nevertheless not an extension of regulatory authority. It is simply the availability of a remedy. And remember, too, which the court didn't, and that is that it's based on conduct, acts and conduct that are in fact anchored in this case, Ohio or in any other state. So it is a remedy that flows from acts and conduct, from a process of distribution that is clearly undertaken from, created in, undertaken from, however you want to refer to it, a definitive process that is undertaken for the sole purpose of distributing securities wherever ultimately they are distributed. So you can't simply focus on a transaction. That's too myopic. And the fact that there may be in some other state another remedy that could be available, and it may or may not be the case, and it would have a different standard of liability such that maybe Credit Suisse in this situation would not be subjected to liability under the blue sky law of one state, but nevertheless under this state's blue sky law would be subjected to liability because of this broader scope of liability. The court did focus on that. I do recognize that, but that was not because the court found that this was an impermissible burden on interstate commerce. It was kind of an afterthought that was brought up simply to say that, well, that sort of thing seems like, you know, it really could have an impact. But that, I think, was, as I say, certainly not material or essential to the court's decision, and that's the problem. I mean, the court made no such finding that there would be any kind of impermissible interference, and really, you can't make that determination given the key definitions and given the key concepts that really have always controlled state and, for that matter, federal securities laws.
So basically, you argue there was no basis for the court even to consider the extraterritoriality principle in the case.
Yeah, exactly. It was misapplied.
Yeah.
And the point being that states do not exercise extraterritorial power when a private civil remedy for purchasers of securities victimized by fraud in the offer and sale of securities is invoked under the blue sky law of the state in and from which the distribution was made. That's the point. The way the court did it here, approached it in this situation, represents a real threat to investor protection and the mission of state blue sky laws if it would be followed. It was not a case for application of the extraterritorial principle. But, you know, as I also address in my article, even if the court were to consider that and to undertake a very thoughtful presentation and consideration of Commerce Clause principles and issues here, the court would have approached it in a different way using a different test that the Supreme Court has articulated over the years, a balancing test in which it would consider any effect on interstate commerce, weigh that against the interest of the state in investor protection. But this court has said absolutely we won't do that. In this case, because this is a per se application of the extraterritoriality principle because it simply represents regulation outside the state, as opposed to focusing on a remedy after the fact.
So, wrapping up, where do you see this headed? What happens next?
Well, this claim, this particular claim in the National Century case, was dismissed on summary judgment. And as a result of the summary judgment being issued, it was on one claim of several that were before the court at that time. And so as a result, it didn't dispose of the entire case. And so as a result of that, you have no appeal being taken from the district court decision right now. There was no attempt made here to seek an interlocutory or immediate appeal from that particular decision. But the fact remains, this decision in the context that we've described it and discussed it is one of first impression. As I said before, the court didn't rely on, and there simply aren't cases out there that hold that the Commerce Clause bars a civil remedy under a blue sky law when the fraud was centered in the state and the process of distributing securities was launched from the state. You know, even this court acknowledged that even if Ohio law were applied, state law were applied, the case law of Ohio, that it would be contrary to what he was doing, because case law in Ohio holds that the blue sky law will reach a securities transaction between a non-Ohio seller and a non-Ohio buyer, so long as the issuer of the securities is from Ohio and the seller has significant contacts with the state. But the court said we can disregard that, because this is a matter of applying the federal extraterritoriality principle, which was not at issue in any of those cases, and therefore by applying it, we simply go a different direction, even though Ohio courts in that situation would have gone the other direction. So what you have is the stage being set for other courts, both state and federal courts, to see whether they're going to accept the bright line transaction test to limit the availability of a private remedy for out-of-state purchasers. The existing authority, such as it is, cases in other states and cases in other courts, suggest that, and these cases, as I say, have dealt with an actual extension or projection of state authority, which was not really what is involved here, as I've said so many times. But these cases, the results of those cases pretty much suggest that this case, this holding is not going to be very well received, the focus on a purely transaction test, because it simply ignores the practicalities of the securities market. And you can't ignore the way securities are distributed through an intermediary process. So this, as I say, has set the stage for other courts to consider that.
So we haven't heard the end of it.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
I know that you will certainly be following this and further developments as they arise, and it'd be great to have you back again as they do come about to talk more about it on a future LexisNexis Legal podcast.
I appreciate the opportunity to do it. It's a very, very interesting issue, and it's catching the eye of not only state regulators, as you might consider, but some commentators out there, in addition to my article that's due out any time now. There have been some fairly strongly worded statements about the decision by a couple of other commentators. It's as I say, it's catching the eye of people because of the impact, what it does in taking away a remedy. And that's what courts are going to have to take a good, hard look at.
Thank you, Mr. Rapp.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this LexisNexis Legal Podcast. Visit the LexisNexis communities at lexisnexis.com/community. Like the communities on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter. The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast, copyright 2011 by LexisNexis, a division of Reed Elsevier Incorporated. I'm Steve Bursler. Thank you for listening.